Hello, this is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Welcome to our weekend program with me, Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, in Czech Life, we talk to a Prague hat designer, Jolana Kotábová. Then, in a new edition of Mailbox, we announce the winner of our monthly quiz. And later, we bring back our popular miniseries from the archives. So please stay tuned for all of that. But now, in a new edition of Czech Life, Jad Wallinger talks to the Prague hatmaker, Jolana Kotábová.
In this week's Czech Life, my guest is Czech milliner Jolana Kotábová, an expert hat designer who, after many years of experience in the field, opened her own studio in Prague in 2011. Located in a beautiful stone house with vaulted ceilings in Prague's Nerudova Street, her studio focuses on original women's hats, combining both traditional elements and modern. Anyone interested in felt, straw, or braided straw designs with flair should take the time to visit. When we met at her workshop in Nerudova Street, I was able to ask Jolana Kotábová not only about millinery in the Czech Republic today, but also how she herself had pursued what some see as an increasingly rare career.
To bylo dost komplikovaný, protože jsem byla taková jako dítě tvořivá, hravá.
It wasn't easy at first. As a little girl, I was very creative, but I can't say I knew exactly what I wanted to do. The main impulse later came from my aunt, who had experience in the artistic field. As a result, I studied the art of hat making at high school, but really only learnt the basics there, how to make headwear, how to sew, and so on. When I was 19, I was introduced to older women who worked in one of the many still existing studios, who had extensive experience dating back to the war or before. Some of them had worked in First Republic salons when hats really meant something. At 19, I found my new co-workers very old, but they were wonderful and taught me a lot.
Jolana's first job was at a milliner's in Jungmannova Street in the city centre. Later she worked in Prague 7. But at that time, in the 1990s, many earlier sites that had survived 40 years of communism began to disappear, hit hard by a drop in demand, increasing rents, and changing fashions. The number of outlets where one could buy original designs lessened significantly. But it was not the first time that the field was hard hit. Jolana Kotábová again.
Before communism, it was widely considered a faux pas to leave the house without a hat. But the 1950s went a long way in changing that, almost stamping out the tradition. Under communism, hats were suddenly shunned or frowned upon as a bourgeois holdover. They were replaced by proletarian women's scarves or berets. That changed again later, but in the 1950s, if you put on a hat, you were seen almost as a provocateur.
In the 1960s, the situation improved and suffered various ups and downs through to the 1980s, but the tradition survived. Like today, there were a number of social events and undertakings where traditional headwear was still considered essential. Weddings, funerals, christenings, official celebrations, and so on. Even at the worst of times, there were always women, both hat makers and passionate customers, says the designer, who stuck with it, for whom the custom-made hat never went out of style. Regarding different types of women's headwear, there are two that are the most widespread in the Czech Republic, hats of felt or straw. The designer explains.
Material is everything, and in the Czech Republic, when it comes to custom-made hats, the most popular are either felt or straw. The felt most often comes from rabbit fur. One prefabricated piece requires four furs. Tonák is a major producer who cuts down the fur, brushes it down, and prepares the felt, and the prefabricated pieces are then used by designers for individual hats. The felt is very formative and pliant when you steam it and holds its shape after drying on a wooden hat shaper or block. After that, you work on the brim. You add decorative elements, which can be beads, a feather, fabric, a bow, or band.
Robí se to stuhama, látkama, tylem, peřím.
Many different hats, of course, are on view at Jolana's studio, all handmade. I asked the designer what principles guided her approach.
Já dělám klobouky, jak extravagantnější, aby byly zajímavý, aby upoutaly.
I try to design hats that attract attention and in some cases can be extravagant, but they also have to be practical. The type of hat a customer chooses can be surprising. Some are bolder than I'd expect, others more conservative. But the main thing is that they must suit the wearer. Everybody is different. I have one customer who attracts a lot of attention, who is very whimsical, and in her case, it's sometimes better to go with a more serious design to sort of ground her. Regarding the process of choosing or ordering a hat, customers generally come in with a certain idea of what they're looking for, or we discuss options and sometimes draw up sketches for designs. So while I have my own internet site, it's much preferred to come in and try on individual hats or agree on a certain look.
Usměrnit tím kloboukem, ale pak jsou typy, které překvapí.
Certainly it is one thing to look at designs sitting on wooden frames on the shelf, and another entirely to see them worn. The designer was kind enough to show me a couple, putting them on, and that is when individual designs truly came to life.
Je to vyrobený ze slámy, je to takovej malinkatej barítek, který se nosí.
This one is straw. It's a kind of tiny beret which you have to wear a bit to the side, but has this great extravagant bow with a feather. It aims to make a bold statement that you can't really get a sense of when you just see it resting on the shelf.
Jako musíš uznat, že to vypadá hodně extravagantně, je to hrozně slušivý. Vidíš, že to vypadá dost jinak, než
the one I have now at first glance has a very dominant brim which slightly hides the eyes and part of the face, but at the same time is alluring.
Člověk se po ní schová, ale zároveň upoutá.
Jolana Kotábová's clients include people from all walks of life who share one thing, a passion for original design and enjoyment from social events. According to the Milliner, although there are fewer designers now working in the field, and the country has been hit by tough economic times, an interest in women's custom-made hats remains. Regular clients include everyone from embassy officials to fashion designers. And then there are those who come for the first time for weddings or other events, who discover hats are for them. The tradition may be a far cry, for example, from Great Britain's, but there are still plenty of events where hats have their place, from the annual Pardubice steeplechase to polo matches and various official gatherings. A year or so after opening her own business and returning to hat making, 7 years after taking time off to raise 2 children with her husband, things have gotten off the ground. And Kotábová expects the second year to draw further interest among those who appreciate quality, which at the same time is affordable, not costing more, for example, than a pair of new shoes. Jolana Kotábová again.
Je tady od každého klobouku jenom jeden kus.
It's all handmade, and no 2 hats, even if a series is asked for, can be exactly the same. There are always tiny differences. They are truly originals. Things are good now. There is a new generation of young people who aren't afraid to put something on their heads. And there is the older generation for whom hats have always been important. A year after launching the business, I feel good about the future.
Jsou tady určitá společenská vrstva, která to zase vyžaduje.
So if you're of the female persuasion, or a husband or boyfriend looking for an ideal gift, and you're interested in hats and want to take a closer look, be sure to visit milliner Jolana Kotábová's website, which is in both Czech and English. You'll find the details at www.radio.cz.
Jan Wellinger with that edition of Czech Life. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for Mailbox with Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's mailbox program, which airs your views and comments. Our long-time listener, Jonathan Murphy from Ireland, was among those who campaigned against Radio Prague leaving shortwave over a year ago. Now he sent us this message.
It has been a busy month at university, but today I finally found a chance to send in four reports on programs I enjoyed during March. I wanted to send you a copy of the short piece I wrote about Radio Prague for the February issue of my Radio Clubs magazine. We have members all around the world and publish a circa 50-page magazine, Contact, each month. My intention has been to encourage shortwave listeners who have not tried listening via the internet to do so.
Thank you very much, Jonathan, for reminding listeners that Radio Prague continues broadcasting and bringing up-to-date information from and about the Czech Republic to listeners the world over, albeit via a different medium. As you write in your article, we continue to issue QSL cards. The 2012 series features notable Czech painters. And, as mailbox listeners know, we still run our monthly quizzes. And we'll get to your answers in a moment, after this. John Novotny from Prague sent us this question regarding a news story concerning the return of the statues of the vain man, the miser, the death, the Turk, the philosopher, the angel, the astronomer and the chronicler to Prague's astronomical clock.
I thought the statues in the astronomical clock were of the 12 disciples of Christ, with Judas Iscariot shaking the money bags as the last one seen. Have I been misinformed or have they been renamed? Thanks for your summary. A must read every night before bed.
You are right in that the astronomical clock features the 12 apostles who appear in the two small windows above the dial on the hour every hour. But there are another 8 statues above and below the dial which are exposed to the sunlight and wind all the time. Those are the ones that have just undergone renovation. And now for our monthly competition. Hans-Werner Lollicke from Denmark sent us this answer.
This time the person you're looking for is Kaspar Buberl. Born in 1834 in Kinchberg nad Ohří in now Czech Republic. After studying in Prague and Vienna, he immigrated to the United States and died in New York in 1899.
Ian Morrison writes from China.
This month's mystery man is the noted sculptor Kaspar Buberl, famed for his American Civil War monuments. He is also famous for the 370-meter-long frieze on the Pension Building in Washington, D.C.
Kajari Chattopadhyay writes from India.
Kaspar Buberl is known for his Civil War monuments. At least 10 stand on the Gettysburg commemorating the valor of various New York state units. The New York monument stands atop Cemetery Hill. Kaspar Buberl is perhaps most famous for the 1,200-foot-long frieze that adorns the National Building Museum in Washington. Originally called the Pension Building, it was the facility in which Civil War pensions were administered.
Christina Fallon from Illinois wrote,
in addition to creating many notable monuments related to the Civil War, he also contributed in sculpting for the Garfield Monument in Cleveland, Ohio. I had the chance to view his work on this particular monument several years ago, and the detailing is exquisite. Very reminiscent of something you would see in perhaps Prague or Vienna, coincidentally where Buberl studied art.
Charles Konesny from Ohio sent us this answer.
Buberl's early studies in art served him well. He arrived in the United States as the country was in the run-up to the Civil War, and as an artist living in those war years, it gave him an insight as to how to commemorate the sacrifices and bravery of the Union and Confederate forces. There were huge losses of life in many of the battles. Buberl created dozens of Civil War statues and monuments, and he also designed terracotta friezes on many public buildings. His work was artistic and flowing, with great attention to detail. So one can say wherever Kaspar worked, he left his mark.
Maria Lukrenek writes from Texas.
It was quite interesting to learn that one of our renowned 19th century American sculptors was Czech-born Kaspar Buberl. He came to America prior to the vast wave of immigration that occurred from the Czech lands to this country in the late 1890s to make his contribution and leave his legacy in this great land. Although most of his statues and monuments were in the northern states, he did create some Confederate memorials in Virginia. Among his creations was a bronze bust of Abraham Lincoln. After a productive life, Caspar Buberl died on August the 22nd, 1899 in New York City. He did not live to see the 20th century, where his quality work endured even into the 21st century.
Colin Law from New Zealand sent us this answer.
Buberl designed the 29-meter-high New York State Monument at Gettysburg, which was modeled on Trajan's Column in Rome. Dedicated in 1893, the bronze and granite monument features a 5-meter-tall bronze female figure representing the state of New York, placing a wreath on the graves of fallen soldiers. A bronze relief, which circles the base of the column, carries 4 scenic panels depicting 4 of the generals killed or wounded in the action at Gettysburg in July 1863. Other panels list the names of over 6,000 soldiers killed, wounded, or missing in action.
Thank you very much for all your answers. This time the prize goes to Christina Fallon from the United States. Our congratulations, and here's a new question for the month of April. This month, we would like you to send us the name of the Czech artist who was born in 1871 in the East Bohemian town of Opochno and is considered to be one of the pioneers of abstract painting. Please send us your answers, as usual, to english@radio.cz by the end of the month, along with your questions, comments and reception reports. We are looking forward to all your feedback. Until next time, stay tuned and take care.
Thank you, Pavla Horáková, for that. We are always happy to get your comments and questions, so do get in touch. The postal address is Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2, and you can also send us an email at english@radio.cz. Coming up next, a rerun of our popular series From the Archives by David Vaughan.
In last week's From the Archives, we followed the tragic last days of the student Jan Palach, who on January the 16th, 1969, set himself alight in protest against growing apathy in the face of the Soviet invasion 5 months earlier. The whole country was in shock. Such a drastic and a violent sacrifice had little precedent in modern Czech and Slovak history, and perhaps for just that reason, Palach immediately became a symbol of the country's lost liberty, and a rallying cry for those who still hoped to save something of the reforms of 1968. Those in power had to be cautious. They were well aware that Palach's legacy could be explosive. Immediately after his death, on January the 19th, there were huge demonstrations in Prague.
We are prepared to fight for his demands, for changing the atmosphere which led him to take such a decision.
One of those who led the protests was the young student activist Jan Kavan, who 30 years later, and in very different times, was to become the Czech Republic's foreign minister.
Our first answer was to organize the first demonstration. 150,000 young people took place in the demonstration, and tens and thousands of Prague population were in the streets waiting for it.
Czechoslovakia's president Ludvík Svoboda was in a difficult position, and his hands were shaking as he addressed Czechoslovak television viewers one day after Palach's death. He began by saying that as a soldier he admired Palach's courage, but he warned people not to use his sacrifice as a starting point for further protests.
K velikému požáru stačí jediná jiskra, ale může stát...
It takes just a small spark to start a great fire, which can cost thousands of lives. I beg you not to underestimate that danger. One One of those who spoke out with a very different message was Václav Havel, at the time already one of the most active and articulate campaigners for democratic reform. His words were not aired by Czechoslovak television or radio.
Čin Jana Palacha je krajním výrazem bolesti nás všech, výkřikem, který se jediný člověk...
Jan Palach's act is an extreme expression of the pain we all feel, one man crying out on behalf of us all. This is also the reason why it is a deliberate political act. The only right way to respond is in the spirit in which it was intended, as an appeal for activity, for a real struggle, for all that we sincerely consider to be right, as a warning against apathy, skepticism, or despair. And here is an unnamed friend and fellow student of Palach with a further warning. We have the impression, and there are clear signs, that some people are trying to distort and misuse this case by suggesting that this student was a psychopath or something like that. As his fellow students and student representatives, we totally reject this. We know that he was a very rational and thoughtful young man, and that anything like that is quite out of the question. For Jan Palach's funeral on January the 25th, 1969, many thousands took to the streets of Prague. Several politicians and public figures spoke, promising to respect his legacy, a promise that was severely compromised in the years that followed. His fellow student, Zdeněk Touš, also spoke. In the name of students and all honest people in this country, I swear that we shall never give in or betray you, that we shall continue our struggle until we have achieved your and our ideal of life in freedom. Over the next 20 years, freedom in Czechoslovakia continued to be pared down. But Jan Palach was not forgotten. It was in his name that students once again took to the streets in January 1989, a foretaste of the Velvet Revolution.
That edition of From the Archives by David Vaughan brings us to the end of today's show. I'm Jan Richter, for all of us here at Radio Prague. Thank you very much for joining us, and be sure to tune in again soon. Goodbye.